Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nancy's Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy, and I host the show. And today, I have a really great guest. I've been looking really forward to interviewing him. His name is Randy Rogers. He's an author, but he has a lot of history that goes with it. But he's the author of the book called The Key of Life, A Metaphysical Investigation. So, Randy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Nancy. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. Now, before we start talking about your book, which is really pretty good, I'd actually like to talk to you a little bit about who you are, what happened to you to make you start this metaphysical investigation and end up writing the book. So, you know, where did it kind of start with you, and what did you do up until that time?
Well, I was born in this small town in western Pennsylvania called Johnstown, and that, in fact, I'm here right now back east visiting, and that's where I grew up, and I went to a Catholic grade school, and that's part of the story is going to take place in that part of it. And I didn't realize any of this was going to happen through my life. I was raised in this Catholic family, and that was the extent of my spiritual training. I had no understanding of the metaphysical or past lives, reincarnation, or any of those things were all foreign to me. And I grew up wanting to be a photographer, knowing that I was a photographer all my life. I carried a camera with me and all through high school, and then I worked for the newspaper here in town. Then the television station hired me, worked for a couple years in Pennsylvania, then moved out to the Phoenix market, worked for 13 years, and then the network hired me, NBC. And I ended up moving over to Los Angeles, working with the Nightly News and Today Show, and that carried me through the 90s. For 20 years of my life, I was a newsman, a photojournalist. And then it started turning tabloid, and I wanted out of the news business, and decided to move into the motion picture because I was there in Hollywood. So I was doing all different types of television shows, and ended up working my way into doing the promotions for the motion picture industry. And that's what I was doing when this story opened up for me, and it was exactly 15 years ago that this story began. And I had just built a new house. I was working in the motion picture industry doing all these movies for what they call a press junket, fly all the press in to interview all the stars of the movie. And we were doing all the ones for Warner's and Disney and just a ton of studios in Los Angeles. And I had just built a new house and was standing in my house this one June day, June 23rd of 1995, and that's where the story begins. And I was looking out, watching the sunset, and I had the feeling that a friend of mine that I had gone to grade school with back here in Pennsylvania had passed away. And I couldn't get this thought out of my head, so I started looking for her. And to really abbreviate up the story, a year later I found her. And when I found her, she had passed away from what I was working on at the time, which was an ovarian cancer video. And I started to notice this synchronicity in my life, and it started me down this path of trying to understand how she could be reaching out to me and what this was all about.
Did it surprise you that you started picking up those kind of emotions or feelings?
Well, yeah, I wasn't expecting anything like that because it came out of nowhere. I mean, from watching a sunset to thinking about a girl I'd gone to grade school with, 30 years earlier, and the last time I'd seen her, it was 73, was when I graduated. We were out of high school, and I had taken her out to on a shoot with me one night. She had been in the hospital down in Pittsburgh and had Hodgkin's disease, and she had been recovered from that, and she was in full remission. And I took her out one evening to go on a shoot, and that was the last time I'd seen her. So we never dated or anything. She was a friend of mine, and I couldn't understand why I was having these thoughts of her. So they did kind of come out of nowhere.
When you were growing up, Randy, did you ever have any other, like, deja vu or any other kind of thoughts, or was this really the very first time that you can remember?
Well, it's the very first time that I can remember actually the thought happening and me following up on it right then and knowing that it was a thought. I had other things that had occurred earlier in my life. As I went through this, go through the story, I kind of started looking back, and as I looked back, I started to notice that I had done certain things before that I really didn't realize how I was doing them. And one of them was forecasting my job with the network, with NBC. The day that they called me, I called that morning. By interpreting these signs that I saw that day in the newspaper, and one of them was I'd read my astrological forecast, and it sounded so. It just made it pop into my head. I said, oh, the network's going to call and hire me today. And I'd gone down to the station and walked in the door, and the secretary is handing me a note saying that NBC's calling from Los Angeles. And it was shocking that I had, you know, a few hours earlier said that was going to happen. And I didn't realize how I was doing it. And then that, as the story went along, I started to understand how that was possible.
Randy, do you think that most people have some form of, you know, those kind of feelings called your intuition, whether they follow it or not? Do you think it's already there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's definitely in everyone. And see, and that's another thing that had happened to me from a young age. My mother had always told me, you know, always listen to your inner voice, that intuition in your head. It will always guide you in the right direction. And don't, you know, to listen to that inner voice. And I did do that all through my career as a photographer. And I'd always be in the right place at the right time. And I was listening to that inner voice talking to me. And I didn't realize it was actually coming from another entity. I always thought that it was just myself talking to, you know, an echo of thinking things out for yourself. And I didn't realize I actually was communicating with a guiding spirit from the other side.
Which is really great. Most people can, and most people do. They just don't realize they're doing that. But what happens a lot of times, Randy, is as a child, and they'll start to get those kind of feelings, or they'll start to pick up on different kinds of visions or energies, they tend to get a little afraid. And if they tell somebody, not so much now as used to be like when I was growing up, but they would say, oh, it's nothing, don't worry about it, don't, you know, just forget it. And a lot of younger kids will shut down that intuitive part of them until, like your awakening here, when it was overwhelming and you just couldn't get beyond it until you investigated it.
Right.
So, you know, most children have a lot of intuition, and if they would just be left alone to use it or be told it's okay to use it, they would be so much better off as they get a little older, because they would be following their guides or their angels or whatever people want to call them to the right place at the right time.
Oh, definitely. It's not, and it's not even for children. I mean, right now, every adult out there is being guided by it too. And I always, when I do these workshops with people, I try to teach them how they can follow that intuition and not turn it off or not shut it down. Because your conscious mind, your waking mind that you're walking around in right now, is always going to immediately cut in and try to turn you in another direction, because your conscious mind has a day set out for you, a pattern of what you're supposed to do, and I've got to go get this done, and I've got to go to the bank, and I've got to get the car washed, and then I've got to pick up the kids, and all these things are going on. But as you move through your day, your subconscious mind is really guiding you in what you should be doing, and it will come in, and you may be driving down the street, and it'll say, well, I should go over and visit Mary. I haven't seen her for a while. And that's your instinct, because you're going near her house, and something told you to do it, and your conscious mind will immediately cut in and say, no, well, you know, no, I got to go, just call her later. And 9 times out of 10, you'll shove it aside and say, you know, I will call her later. But there might not be a later. Most of the time, there's a reason to cut in to tell you to do that. And there was something important. Either Mary needed something right at that moment and she needed some support, or that might be the last time you were going to see Mary. And so, and I have many stories like that to tell about things that have happened, and that people don't follow their intuition, and they always are regretting it in the end.
Yeah, usually it's like they get their intuition and they let their logic mind talk them out of it, and then all of a sudden they go, I knew I should have done it the first way.
Yeah.
You know, then it would have worked.
Oh,
so,
yeah, your conscious
really,
and subconscious mind
working
against each other.
Yeah, logic versus your intuition part. And I call that the heart smart part, your intuition part.
Uh-huh.
And I keep telling people, focus on that part, listen to it, go with it, you know, let it grow. It's going to actually help you, not hurt you. It can even save your life. You know,
yeah.
It can help you communicate with other people. There's a lot that can be said about it. And yet, the way we're raised, and, you know, nothing against any of the religions, but a lot of the religions will, you know, try to cut it short or try to get you not to believe it. Society wants you to be crazy if you can see things, you know.
Yeah.
Now it's changing, though. It's actually getting better, Randy, because, you know, I've been doing my intuitive life coaching for over 37 years, and so I've watched all these changes come, and it's like I'm loving it, because it's like, just allow it, you know, let it happen. But when you got your information and that started you on this investigation, what was it about?
Well, the you mean the information that was coming to me, or the or what was the story about? Go ahead again.
You wrote the story about your metaphysical investigation, but it started with Kathy.
Right.
You getting feelings that she was talking with you.
Right.
So can you kind of tell the listeners a little bit about that story? Because we're not going to give your whole book away.
Oh, yeah. No, I can
do
that.
We're going to talk about it. Tell them a little bit about it so that they kind of understand when we talk about intuition and how important it is, they can start to relate to that, okay?
Well, sure. What happened was I had that first initial thing that happened in 95, and it was hammering at me right that night that it happened. I mean, call your mother right now. No, don't wait. You know, that inner voice kept saying. So I picked up the phone and called her. I mean, I had the phone records. This, by the way, is a true story. All the names are true. The dates, times, places, everything in it is as accurate as I could make it. And I kept a journal of everything. So everything in it is factual. And when I called her on that June 23rd, that evening of 95, and I didn't tell her I was having premonitions, but I told her to, you know, I asked her where Kathy's family was from, it was now, and I was trying to find Kathy again. Well, she didn't know, and she said she'd find it for me, but that never happened. And I kept hounding her over a year. Every time I talked to her, hey, did you find out anything? And never did, until exactly a year later, and that's when I had a dream and an out-of-body experience. And those were all new to me, too. The dreams weren't, but the out-of-body experience definitely was. And I had gone to bed on the evening of July 5th, 1996, and I was wakened at 2 in the morning from a dream I was having. And in the dream, I was out in Palm Springs, and I was in this building. I described it in detail. And from the background, I was talking to some people there in this building, and they were all telling me to don't worry about Kathy. She died peacefully in her sleep. But from the background, I could hear Kathy telling me to, No, wake up, you got to write this down and don't find out what happened to me and tell these four girls. And she named four girls we had gone to grade school with. I mean, names I hadn't thought of since grade school. So I woke up at 2 in the morning, and I'd never done this before, and I went downstairs and wrote the dream down. Then I went to go back into bed, and when I was lying back in the bed watching the fan circle over top of me, that's when I had this strange lifting sensation, and I floated up out of my body, and I found myself looking back down at the bed at myself and my wife next to me, and she had never woken up or knew that I was had gotten up. And now I'm floating above the bed, and I can feel the presence of Kathy next to me, and she starts telling me where she is, what the world's about, and I'm trying to understand why she's coming to me. But she kept on telling me that the world was like if it was a sponge and all the people and everything on it was all out of that sponge material and you stuck it in the water, she said, I would be where the water is. I would be the water, she said. That's what happens to you after you pass on. You don't really die, but you engulf this world we're in, that we really are permeating this spiritual world that gives it all its life. And then she kept repeating, I kept wanting to know why she was coming to me, but she kept repeating over to me, fill my spirit, it's what makes us as one. And as she said those words, I tell everybody wanted to know what she looked like, and I said, well, we didn't look like anything. We looked like these spiraling purple bands of energy. I said, there was no body to us, but we were this energy that spiraled around each other. And as she kept repeating those words, fill my spirit, it's what makes us this one, I said, this overwhelming feeling of love that had been permeating me just wound around. We wound around each other and became this one entity, and I kept floating higher, but as she repeated the words, I slowly drifted back down into my body, and she told me, write this down, you won't remember, and I reached over and scrawled those words on the paper, and that was, then I went to sleep. And then the next morning is when I woke up, and I realized that this was out of control. I was having these dreams for a year, and so now I got to go and call my mother and tell her what was happening. And that's what sparked the search for Kathy, really, at that point. My mother searched. By the end of the month, she called me and told me she had found her, Kathy's sister, who was a nun down in Pittsburgh, outside of Pittsburgh, and she told me that Kathy had passed away from ovarian cancer. Well, I about dropped the phone when my mother told me that, because I was working on a video on breast and ovarian cancer for the Fire and Ice Ball. I was producing this and directing this film that was going to play that fall, and I could see the synchronicity of it right away. And when you read the book, you'll see more than that had happened. A lot of other synchronicity things had happened that was pointing in this direction that I was to continue investigating this story. So that led me back to, of course, to first place I went to see the nun, to see what was going on. And when I walked into the convent outside of Pittsburgh in August of that year, I was back here for my reunion, my class reunion, and I took one day off, went down there, and while I'm in there talking to her, the phone rings in the convent. And this is what synchronicity is about. I happen to be in the convent, the phone rings, the nun goes to answer, she comes back, she has a slip of paper in her hand with a phone number on it, and she hands it to me, says, that was my other sister, Chris, and Kathy's sister, Chris, and she's out, lives out in Palm Springs. And I said, wow, what a coincidence you're calling. I said, and this is the nun talking, she says, there's this guy here talking with me now, and he's saying he's having these dreams, and Kathy's coming to him, and she started telling him about these, what Kathy was saying, and I said, and Chris said, I need to talk to him right away. Give him my number and have him call me when he gets out here. Well, in my dream, remember, I said I had been in Palm Springs. Well, that's where Kathy was when she passed away. And so I went out to Palm Springs then when I got back to visit with Chris. And she shows me around all of Kathy's favorite places. And this is what really locked me onto the story. The last place she was going to take me was where Kathy had passed away, at this hospice out in Palm Springs. And we're driving down the street. Before we even get there, I started yelling and pointing out the window. That's the building I was in my dream. That was in. I jumped out of the car, and she never even identified it, but it was the hospice. And I ran up in the rooms. Everything I had described and written down that night, there it was in front of me, exactly the way I remembered seeing it. And so I had been in this hospice in my dream several weeks earlier. And I knew something was going on. There was no way this was a coincidence. And that just made, that took me on this synchronistic journey that is where the story really takes off. And it leads me, from that point on, I started following all these signs that were in front of me. And as I followed them, it led me to a Russian acupuncturist in Los Angeles who could put these needles in me, and you could do what was a past life regression. And I knew nothing about this. In fact, I had discounted this whole thing. I didn't want to do it originally. But signs pointed me clearly into this woman's office that I had to be there. And when I went in to see her, the story really took off from that point.
You know, a lot of people, Randy, probably have had many different kinds of things like this, but they usually don't follow them up. I, like you, I follow everything up. If my intuition tells me something, I have to check it out. You know, not because I don't believe it, but because I want it explained to me a little bit more. And it doesn't always come crystal clear. You know, it takes a little bit of time to get that clarity. And so there's a lot of open ends yet to check. But a lot of people really won't. They'll kind of discard it, or they'll, you know, it'll get so much at them that all of a sudden they'll start telling somebody about it. And usually that person, unless they know, you know, about intuition and regression and on all that good stuff, they go, man, you're just, you know, you're just crazy. You've been doing drugs. You've been drinking too much. What's the case going on? You know, and again, that kind of makes people want to discard, you know, that truth that they really have in them. Yeah. And I think it's so important not to do that. Now, you talk about regression. Can you explain to listeners, in case some of them don't know what it is, what regression is and how it worked for you?
Right. Well, I didn't know what it was either. In fact, the first time I ever heard the word was I was out to dinner with some friends, Ron and Renee, and this is in the book, and I'm sitting there having dinner with them in a Thai food restaurant, and Renee starts talking about, I told her what was happening with me, and I had told no one. Exactly what you just said was the reason I told no one, because here I am working. I'm this newsman. I was this former newsman working in the Hollywood business. I didn't want anybody to think I was crazy, so I had kept this a secret for a year that I was even looking for, and now I'm starting to tell select people. I told my mother, told my wife, and now I told this friend of mine, these two friends at dinner. And that day when I told them, she starts telling me about this woman named Lucy. Oh, you should see Lucy Postoloff, this Russian acupuncturist I go to, and she's incredible. She can stick these needles in you, and you can do a past life regression therapy. And I start, what's a past life regression therapy? Oh, well, that's where you go back, and everybody has a past life, and because we reincarnate, and she starts talking about reincarnation, and I had no knowledge of what this was about. And, well, you lived all these other lives, and she'll put these needles in, and you'll be able to describe one of these past lives. You'll go back and see exactly who you were and tell the whole story. And I start, oh, okay, thanks, you know, and I smile politely, and, oh, yeah, I'm going to do that. And I kind of left the dinner thinking, well, that's off the deep end. I'm not going there. But then as soon as I left, I went to New York with her boyfriend was working with me, Ron, and we were there shooting on a movie, and promo for a movie, and all these signs were pointing around me, and I could see them clearly, and I started to point them out to Ron to say, look, I'm not crazy. Look at what's happening here. And it was clearly pointing back that I should go see this Lucy Postoloff. And I thought, well, I'm going to call her as soon as I get to L.A., and on Monday I'll call Renee and get her number. Half hour before I called Renee, Renee's calling me saying, oh, Randy, you're not going to believe what happened. I was in Lucy's office on Saturday night. You guys were in New York, and she's telling me I should read this book. Well, I was talking to Ron then, and Ron said, you just handed him the book on the plane, you know. And I had the same exact book that Lucy. I said, I know. I need to see this Russian woman. I know it's all pointing this direction. So I go in to see her, and this is another part that really locked it in for me. I walk in Lucy's office, and I said, she's asking what's going on with me, and I told her that I'm working on this cancer video, and that's all I got out of my mouth. And she said, oh, my mom's got cancer really badly. She has breast cancer, and she's in this program at UCLA, though, that they only took 70 women in it, and they're doing a special study. And I said, Lucy, that's the program I'm shooting in my video, one of the programs I was shooting at UCLA. And I said, everybody would say, wow, what a coincidence. You're in the office, 14 million people surrounding you, and you're in the office with some woman who's in the program that you're shooting. But I knew it wasn't a coincidence. I knew that it was a mother marker on this, like a highway marker along this path I should be following. So I let her put these needles in me, and you get in a really relaxed state, and you are able to access your subconscious memories, and you all of a sudden you're in another world, and you're describing another time and another place you've been in. And it's a fascinating subject, and that's what's really been the driving force of my whole story here. Once I got into that, I was addicted to it. I couldn't let go of it, because every time I went, I told something else that had a direct bearing on my life. And when you read the story, you'll see how I just didn't tell a story about who I was, and you have to either take it as the truth or not. I went and showed you how it really was tied into my life, and how these events were, you know, matching with the current events today. Even the people that I was with in my current life were in my past lives with me. And it was such an incredible ride to go down that path of following these regressions, you know, going through them, that when I go out and talk about the story today and do lectures and book signings, everyone, the first thing out of their mouth is, I want to see Lucy. I want to go to Los Angeles. How can I find Lucy? Well, you can get out to Los Angeles. You can find Lucy, and she's definitely out there still. But I wanted to be able to help people, because I'm traveling all over, and I wanted to be able to show them what it was like to have a regression. So recently, earlier in the year, I went and sought out the best hypnotherapist there is out there, and his name's Dick Sutphin, and he'd been doing it since the 70s. And he was having a training session in Marina Del Rey, right down over the hill from my house. So I went down, and I took a week out of my life and trained with him. And I learned how to become a hypnotherapist. And it's been an incredible journey from that point forward now. I've been going around doing these workshops, putting entire groups of people under hypnosis and letting them experience past lives, and also doing private sessions with them. And fixing a lot of problems letting them understand why certain things were happening in their current life and how they had brought them over from previous lives.
Yeah, and it's really funny, Randy, because a lot of people, first of all, don't believe that you get reincarnated, which in my opinion is kind of silly to think that, because it's not like we have one time to get it perfect, because believe me, this is not the perfect world. You know, and, you know, hypnotherapists, they've been doing regressions for a very long time.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, you know, people will get in, unless it's done correctly, and if they're really good, they can, which you probably are, but they'll get into a place, and instead of being able to stand as a bystander and just kind of watch without all the emotions attached to it, they'll all of a sudden get into the emotional part, and that's, you know, not really the place that they should be. And but it does happen. You know, I have to tell you a story about myself. It's really funny. This lifetime that I am in right now,
mm-hmm.
I've gone through a lot of things, obviously, to get to where I am. And one of the things that happened to me, whether I wanted to do it or not, is I was automatically regressed to find out about this other lifetime where I was stoned to death, and how all the characters in that lifetime were in this lifetime, and trying to figure out who was who and where they were and why I had to do it again, you know, things like that. And it was, you know, it was pretty amazing, because the other lifetime I had been stoned to death because I refused to marry this man that the the night's time and all that where they would give you to somebody and had money and all that stuff. But I refused to marry this person because I was actually in love with somebody else. And in this lifetime, I ended up marrying that person, got a divorce from him, but I was still knew who this person was I should have been with, but with certain circumstances, it just wasn't going to be, which was very hard to accept, but you have to accept and keep going. You know, so between these two lifetimes, I got to pinpoint everybody back then and why they're in my life this time and what needed to be done and needed to be settled in order for it to end so that there's not another lifetime repeating it.
Right.
And it was a very strange lesson and a very painful one at points, you know, but then a very good one because I did, I think I learned most of the things I needed to learn. But, you know, it happened to me automatically. It's not like I said, okay, I'm going to go and be regressed because, you know, I only wanted to be regressed after it all happened to find out if what had happened to me was really what happened, you know.
Right.
So when you talk about regression, it's kind of funny.
Yeah, well, what you're talking about, I mean, and exactly what how you had to smooth it all, that's all about karma, smoothing that karmic wave. And it's all, that, when we talk about this, that's the first thing I have to talk about when I do the talks with people about the regressions. The reason we're doing this is to understand what karma is about, what your karmic lesson is here for, because everything revolves around that word. That's the key word for our lives here. And understanding these lessons that we put on ourselves and why we put them on ourselves. And it's always has something to do with something that carries over from the past. And what you said earlier, too, I want to bring back up is you said that a lot of people don't believe in reincarnation. People always ask me that first question, did you believe in reincarnation? And I always say I never believed in anything. I was this newsman that only looked for the truth. I didn't belief in itself is not a good word for me anymore because I got rid of that when I got rid of my religion. And like you said, not that religion's a bad thing, but and I have another story I'll tell you about that in a second, but religion is about beliefs, and beliefs are not truths. Beliefs are something that somebody tells you, and you have to take as it being the truth without any proof or understanding of it being the truth. I mean, they just want you, the churches want you to believe these things. And they tell you that and preach that to you, and that's what was preached to me in the Catholic Church all along. And when you start to really examine the details of your life, and that's what this is about, I tell people to go out there and examine these details. What you're saying that they don't want to do, they'll do for a little while and they'll let go. You don't have to tell everyone about it, and you can tell your select friends that will understand, but follow those truths in your life, and they will lead you to an understanding of what is the truth and what isn't. And I don't want them to believe reincarnation either. I want you to go out and find it to be the truth in your life the way I did. Go out and examine, and you will see what is going on with you. When you start to follow and understand these synchronicities in your life, you'll start to see what it's all about.
Randy, do you think everything has been predetermined? See, I don't personally believe in coincidence, okay?
Right.
So, you know, do you think things are predetermined and this is the way it is, this cannot be changed, it's kind of set in stone? Do you believe that?
Yeah, well, you know, that's the other question. You're asking all the good questions. Those are people. Do you believe that everything's predestined or do you believe we have a choice, people say, ask me. And I said, well, I believe that what we've created here is an illusion of choice, I call it. And it's the greatest illusion we've created on ourselves. When we get down to that crossroads and we have to make the left turn or the right turn and we're making this big decision in our life, we think we're struggling with this, but in reality, deeply embedded in us is what we're going to do, is a script that we're following. And we came here to do it, and you're going to do it. You're going to follow through on your script. And yes, you do have that choice. But the choice really is an illusion to you because the script was buried inside of you before you got here. And I have a lot of people don't, that's what people have a hard time understanding is these roles we play and how you can play all these different roles. And how can you say you were Amelia Earhart when somebody else down the street wrote a book that they were Amelia Earhart and I've seen five other books by five other women or even men saying they were Amelia Earhart. How can all of them been Amelia Earhart? Well, they all could have been. And it's very easy to understand once you understand about who we are, where we are, that we're on this timeline. And that's where we are right now. You and I are in this moment. We're talking right now. We're living in the moment. We can't go back a half hour to when the show began. We can't go forward. We can only live in this moment right now. And as a result of that, that has its limitations on us here. But when we go in, when we go to sleep at night, when we go into one of these regression sessions, when we pass away, we jump off of this timeline. We go over outside the timeline, and now you can look forward or back in your life. You can see the future and you can see the past. And it's, believe me, it is laid out there, and you're following a timeline that you have things to do on it. And these events are going to occur. That's how some people have these, you think, you know, it's some big secret to it. They're just jumping off the timeline, pulling out bits of information, able to come back onto the timeline with the knowledge of what's going to happen, you know, tomorrow. And they may start saying, this is going to happen, this is going to happen, and no one's paying attention to them. But yet they saw that little glimpse of it, and were able to bring it back into their waking state. Because when we're in this state, we're in the moment and now, we are so much embedded in our character. We have this mask pulled over us, and we don't have any knowledge of our past or our future. We only know the role we're here to play right now. But that's where these regressions and being able to step outside your body and understand and take a look around and really see who you were and where you're going comes in handy.
Yeah, and it really is, Randy. I mean, I've had visions and stuff since I was 6 years old, and I don't doubt any of them. I just try to see what happens. I mean, like as a child, I was being told my entire life, basically, that 2010 is a turning point. Now everybody's worried about 2012. Well, I hate to
right.
tell people this, but 2012 is already here
yeah.
because it's already started during 2010. You know,
I tell everyone, yeah, I said 2012 is the beginning of the new world. I said it's all leading up before it. I said two or three years before it is when it's going to happen. I said starting this year, I said, where do you see the events that are coming down the line here? And
mm-hmm.
they may appear to be bad, but nothing is bad. I keep telling everyone everything is happening to change this world. And by 2012, that's whenever our consciousness level will be raised and we're going to move into a new way of doing things.
Which is good. I mean,
right.
it
oh,
really
very
is good.
Good. Yeah.
You know, and not everybody will make it, you know, but
no,
that's
exactly.
what they've chosen. That's what they've chosen because
yeah.
I'm a very firm believer that you come here already decided what you're supposed to do. But,
exactly.
You know,
the role we're playing. Yeah.
Right. It's kind of, you know, blocked a little bit with what we've been told as we've been raised. You know,
yeah.
so I try to get people to understand that, just like you said, you're living in an illusion, and
right.
you can create it any way you want, but it's still going to turn out in a good way. The way it's meant to be may not feel like
yeah.
it, may not be all that great at the moment, but the end result usually is if you just stick with it and follow it. Randy, could you give out your website and how
sure.
they can get your book?
It's thekeyoflife.net, you can go to, or randolphrogers.com. But thekeyoflife.net or randolphrogers.com, either one of those will take you to the website. And also, I'm on Facebook out there under The Key of Life or Randy Rogers, either one of those you can get to me. And you can get it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble as well online. But, yeah, these the things that, that interest me so much and I really want to talk to is about these roles we play. And I have a great story to tell you about how you can understand who you are and what we're here to do exactly. And you're going to never look at yourself again the same way in the mirror after I tell this story. And this happened on December 23rd of this past year with me. I was rushing to a book signing in Venice, California. I had a big event happen to me not less than an hour earlier. And I was looking for this sign in my life because they're always around me. And I never, without fail, they're never not there. And nothing had happened. And I kept thinking, wow, you know, it's nearly the end of the day. I should have this sign showing me I'm on this path and nothing's happened. So I get in the bookstore here it is, 2 days before Christmas, I'm going to do a book signing. And it wasn't planned for 2 days before Christmas. It was planned a couple weeks earlier. But on that Saturday that was supposed to happen, I got a call. It was pouring down rain. The store was flooding. And they called me up and said, we have to cancel your signing and you'll have to call on Monday and reschedule. And rather than get upset about it, I just always am cool about whenever there's a change, I say, okay, fine. And I called up. And on Monday, and they said, well, we only have 1 day left, the 23rd. Well, the 23, when you read my book, and if you look at the cover of it, you'll see that number prominently on the front of it. It's full of these symbols, and that number was the main symbol of change and signs that always showed up for me when it needed it. And that was Kathy's birthday, the 23rd of June, and that's when the story started, actually. So I knew when they called on Monday and they said, we only have the 23rd available, I knew something was going to happen that day. Well, this big event did happen to me, and I'll tell you in a minute what it was. But now here I am at the bookstore getting ready to do this talk, and two women show up, and they're talking with me, and a reader had showed up from the store, and he had read the book and wanted to talk to me about it, and then he disappeared for a while. And then pretty soon he shows up with this gray-haired older guy and says, Randy, I ran down the street, grabbed this guy, he was leaving, but I knew he should hear your story for some reason. I wanted him to come back, and he goes, let me introduce him to you. And he sticks out his hand, this guy says, hi, I'm George Lazenby. And I about fell over. And I'll explain to you in a second who he is, and so the listeners understand. But I'm looking at my watch, and I'm shaking so bad. I'm going, oh, my God, I can't believe you're here, George. I said, I was looking for this sign, and you showing up here tonight is it. I said, because I said exactly 40 years ago tonight. I said, I was in 1969 on this evening, 40 years ago, I was a 16-year-old kid working at the State Theater here in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. I was changing the marquee in a snowstorm up on a ladder to read On Her Majesty's Secret Service, George Lazenby as James Bond. I said, and I was putting your name up on the marquee that night. And I said, and that was my favorite James Bond movie of all time. I've talked about you for 40 years, about how I've seen that movie so many times, and I don't care about any of the other ones. I said, this was my favorite story. This storyline, it was so romantic. I said, and the reason it's important tonight is, I said, I went and not an hour ago had gone out and bought an engagement ring for my girlfriend. And I was looking for this sign, and you showing up here is it. I said, because that was the movie that James Bond got married in. I said, that movie was so interesting to me, was it was different than any other Bond film out there. And he had fallen in love with Diana Riggs and gotten married. And of course, George started joking with me. Then he said, well, you know, I hate to break this to you, Randy, but my wife got killed in that movie. I started laughing. I said, yeah, it's not about what happens. I said, it doesn't matter what happens from here. It's just the sign is there. And I said, and you showing up here tonight was major sign for me being here. And I said, and it's perfect that you're here because you're the perfect person to explain how this all works, who we are and what we're here. So I started my talk up about how we play these roles and that. And I said, when I say the name James Bond, what do you think of that character, Nancy? Who is James Bond? Not who plays him, but who is he?
To me, when I saw the James Bond, I tell you, he was the Secret Service person who was good. And he was honest, and he was adventurous, and he didn't care.
Right.
He didn't
was
care.
British Secret Service agent 007. He had a license to kill, had all these beautiful women around him, and went all these adventures trying to save the world from these madmen, right? And that's the iconic image and character of James Bond. No matter what movie you go to, even today, you know that's the story you're going to see because that's who James Bond characters is. I said, but then I said to the people, I said, but how many people have played James Bond? Let's name them here. And we started out, you know, Sean Connery and Roger Moore and Timothy Dalton. And I said, Daniel Craig's playing him right now. And I said, and George, you've played him. I pointed to George and I said, but if I ask you right now, George, I'm going to ask you, are you James Bond? And he laughed. He said, no, I'm not James Bond. I played him once. And I said, well, I'm not Randy Rogers. I played him once. You're not Nancy, you played her once. That's who we are, see? We're not these characters that we look in the mirror and see every day. We're playing. You've got to look past it and see the spirit of who you are and understand, really feel that spirit inside of you and understand that's who you are. You're not the character you're playing. You're just playing the role.
Right, which is very important because, again, Randy, I don't think people realize that, you know, they get so caught up.
They get caught up in being the character, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, and then they can't get out of it, and it's like, well, just take a few steps back for a little bit.
Exactly what you just said there. When you understand who you are, then that allows you to step back from the drama that wants to draw you into the role you're playing. You're playing the role, and everyone wants to draw you into this drama. And when you can pull yourself away from that drama and let it play out in front of you, don't get caught up in it. You know, just approach it in a different way. You will see a change in the way your life is going.
Yeah, and again, because of all of the counseling I do, we have to do that many times over before people actually will have either enough faith or enough guts or enough beliefs to try it. And then once they try it, it's like, oh, that felt really good.
Right.
Well,
yeah, why haven't I been doing this all my life? Exactly.
You know, because most of the time people don't, you know, they don't help them with it. They categorize you, and that's who you are, and that's how you're going to be.
Exactly.
And if you're a loser now, you're a loser the rest of your life. If you're great,
right.
You're great. And people get caught up in that.
Yeah.
And it's very important, like you said, Randy, that they don't, because
exactly.
It's not the way it is.
No, and these roles, that's how these multiple roles, exactly what we said about how many people have played James Bond. You've had all these characters played them, yet the character is still the same. Well, there are multiple people have played Abraham Lincoln. He's still being played right now on the timeline. He's just gone from our timeline, it's the past, because we're in the moment, remember, and all we know
mm-hmm.
is what was in the past. But when you're off the timeline, remember, that's still out there. It's a nonstop, continuous loop countless thousands of spirits are jumping in and playing those roles so they can experience what it was like to be him, what it was like to be. We all have the ability to draw on the other. When we're on the other side, that's who we are. We're all part of one entity, of if you want to call it God or whatever name you want to attach to it. But that spirit is us. It's all of us broken into all these little pieces playing these roles. And we get the spiritual growth by playing the role. And we go back to the other side when we pass on. We don't really die. We just move back to the spiritual realm. And now we're larger and bigger. Our spirit has grown. And in fact, that's what makes all of us, or God, grow, or whatever you want to call it. You know, that's who we are. We are God in broken into pieces. You know, that's what it is, and that's how he grows as a spirit. You know, it's back and forth. It's constant ebb and flow of it. You can feel it around you. You can feel the life flowing through this world that we're in as you walk around in it every day.
Randy, do you think it would be real important for children to, you know, kind of understand this and learn this a little bit better than what they're really being told? Do you think that, you know, children in general are much more open to receive this kind of information than an adult is?
Well, I think they are, and it would be great to be able to teach that to them now. And a lot of people are. I mean, if the parents have found this new awakening, which is what you're calling it, and that's what I called my first chapter of the book, because that's what happened. I woke up and realized what was going on. I didn't buy into what I'd been told to believe as a kid anymore. I understood that there was something else out there happening. And as a newsman, I investigated it. I investigated it the same way I investigated a story, and it paid off for me in big returns in the end when I discovered what the truth was. So everyone out there can do that. Unfortunately, you're right in the fact that, I mean, I come into areas and it's so ingrained, and they're going to teach that, you know, this same belief to their kids. And at some point in your life, that quits working for you, because when everything you're living your life is based on a belief, at some point it's going to fall down, because a belief has no basis in truth. And the story that really drives that home was one that I wrote about in the book, that when I was investigating this, I was led out to Ojai, and I found this son of a guy who was, L.W. Rogers was his name, and it's tied into my whole story. I pulled this book off the shelf with this guy's name on it and started telling people who he was without knowing anything about him, but yet I could tell them who he was and where, when he died, and different things about him. And when I found his son, he had died in 1953, right before I was born, this L.W. Rogers. But I found his son out in Ojai, and he was 90 years old. And I was asking him, what do you ascribe to? What do you, I didn't want to say believe in, but what do you follow as a truth in your life? And he said he followed this guy, Krishnamurti. He listened to what he had talked about. And Krishnamurti was this great spiritual teacher from the early 1900s on up into the 1980s. And he died out there in Ojai. And one of the things he told was a story about the devil and his friend were walking down the road one day. And they were walking along, and all of a sudden, up ahead of them on the roadway, they saw a man bend over, pick something up off the roadway, examine it, and then stick it in his pocket. And the friend said to the devil, "What was that man put into his pocket?" And the devil said, "Oh, well, that was a piece of the truth." And the friend said to the devil, "Well, that's not very good news for you then, is it?" And the devil said to him, "Oh, not at all. I'm going to help him organize it." And that speaks volumes to what is going on. When you have somebody else organize the truth for you, then is it the truth anymore? And that's what Krishnamurti didn't. He didn't want people following him. I don't want people following me. I want people to go out and examine the truth in their own life and find out what it is. And then you'll know what to follow as you'll hang on to the truth and discard everything else in your life.
Here's what I did, Randy. I don't know if you looked at my website, but I had a business in Chicago for 37 years.
Uh-huh.
Well, actually 35 years. And then because of my granddaughter with the school that she was at, well, this Montessori school, telling my daughter who was an instructor there that there was something wrong with my granddaughter, that she couldn't focus, she doesn't want to stop talking, she wants to lead, she doesn't listen. So there must be something wrong with her. She has a chemical imbalance. She, you know, something's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after a little bit of time, I noticed that my daughter was not having a good time going to work. And I asked her, you know, what's wrong? I said, Tracy, what's happening? She goes, well, Mom, they think there's something wrong with Taylor. I said, really? And what might that be? She said, well, the owner of the school says she can't focus. You know, she doesn't listen. She wants to talk. She wants to lead, you know, but her big thing is she just can't focus. And I said, really? And so what are they telling you you should do? They said, well, they said she probably has a chemical imbalance. She probably needs to be put on something. I said, really? I said, Tracy, do me a favor. When you go to work tomorrow and you take Taylor with you, I said, you ask them at 3 years old if this little girl cannot focus and she doesn't pay attention, why is it she can watch a full-length video movie one time, doesn't matter how long in between she sees it, but the next time she sees it, she knows every single word by
right.
every single character that's being said exactly when it's to be said, and she's doing it while she's playing on the computer.
Yeah.
Now, you ask them how she's capable of doing that. Well, of course, they couldn't answer. So I thought, well, if that's happening to my granddaughter, it's happening to a lot of kids.
Oh,
so
yeah,
then
sure.
I start checking into things, okay? Found out all these kids are being put on Ritalin, all these kids
oh, yeah.
with creative minds, you know, they have ADD, they have ADHD, they're problem
yeah.
children, they need to be on something. Well, it upset me a lot.
Yeah.
So what I did is, even though I had my business in Chicago for the 35 years, I moved to New Mexico. I moved down here for the sole purpose of finding land, building a school on it, opening and running it. And it's called the School of Now, which is a school that will never be outdated, and it's a school of truth, which means the children actually get to be all they can be without all these hang-ups that we have been, you know, kind of forced upon us for years and years and years and years, and without the drugs, because they really don't need,
yeah.
the majority of them do not need to be on these drugs by any means. So that was my sole purpose, to move here to New Mexico.
Yeah.
Now, everybody in Chicago said to me, how could you give up your business after having it for 35 years, Nancy? I said, trust me, I'm not giving it up. I am extending it. So I got down here 3 months into being into New Mexico. I met a person that can help me write grants. I met a person to design my school, which is made out of 19 monolithic domes. I also met a person who introduced me to somebody who could donate land. Now, today, I have 22.59 acres of land donated to me to build my school on.
Yeah.
All happened less than a year.
Wow.
All right? So, you know, when I tell people, you know, I follow what comes to me, I really do. But this school is so important for these children, because they're not going to get it if they're not allowed to get it.
Right.
And so that was my purpose of moving to New Mexico. And that's really what I've done, Randy. So,
wow. Where are you in New Mexico?
I'm about 23 miles south of Albuquerque in a town called Las Lunas.
Oh, there's that number again, 23. I know
that's
Las
right.
Lunas. Yeah, I'm going to be heading back across this way, too, when I come out of Pennsylvania. And we were driving because I was doing a whole I brought my production van with me with all my production stuff, and we're doing all these workshops. So I'll be heading back out of here soon. So maybe if I come near there, I'll give you a call when I'm coming through.
Oh, you better, because
yeah,
I'd like to meet with you. Yeah,
yeah,
I'd like to meet with you. The school's not built yet because,
yeah.
I got the land. I have it, you know, deeded to – I have a 501c3, so it's deeded to my 501c3,
right.
which is a Child's Miracle Mind, Inc. But the School of Now is actually coming together,
right.
and in a very short period of time. And really, it's because I follow – what has been told to me and what comes through me.
That's a great name for it, too, because I always tell people about living in the present, and Eckhart Tolle wrote that great book, The Power of Now, and it has such an impact on today, and when you're living on this timeline, you really do have to stay focused in the only way you can manipulate around here is staying focused in the now, not worrying about the future, not worrying about the past, but staying present in the moment, and once you do, all these other things just fall away from you, these other problems and pains and issues. So it's an important message out there too.
It is, you know. And if you turn now around, it spells one, W-O-N.
Yeah.
You know, it's like falls right together. But you know, so that's what I came out here to do. It's why I asked you about children, because I'm a very firm believer that these children are very, very gifted children today, have been here for a while and still yet to come, and they're not getting what they need. Instead, they're being drugged, and I have a very hard time with that.
Oh, I wouldn't. I had the same issues when you take your kid into school. They always try to label them with something, and that same thing happened with mine. But it never got past that with us because I wasn't a drug believer at all. And all you have to do is turn on the news at 6 o'clock any evening, and you'll see what is running this country. It's a bunch of drug, advertising, and that's what's controlling everyone out there. Take a drug for this and take a drug for that and take another drug for this, and pretty soon it got you going and you can't get unhooked from it then. And that's what's going on. No, they immediately start that with your kid when you get in. He's ADHD, this is that. You got to get these things on. And they're not understanding what these children are evolving. And some of the things that are evolving is their abilities and they have to be taught in a different way so they can understand how to use this. Because that's what's changing. We're evolving and we're raising our consciousness level. And the people who don't want to move along with it will be the ones that aren't going to be, part of this events that are going to happen in the next few years here that are changing right now with the world. And it's just everybody's playing a role. It's all part of the role we played. I said there are no victims, and that's another part of karma. There are no victims. You can't blame anyone for anything in your life. Everything happens the way it's supposed to. And whenever you saw all the people die in Haiti, they didn't really die. They took on that role because that was a great spiritual growth role for them. I mean, look at somebody that has cerebral palsy out there. I have friends that have that, and they are the most outgoing personalities, and you're thinking, how can they be like that? Everybody wants to know how they can be so cheerful. Well, they are strong spirits that jumped into that role knowing it would be the most challenging role to take on in this life, and they're getting the biggest spiritual growth from it because everything is a struggle in that life, and that's what spiritual growth is about. It's about the struggle.
It is, and not all of it's easy, but it could be made easier if you allowed it.
Oh, it can be very easy if you follow if you just let go and follow the path and don't fight against it. People always said that to me. How did you get out to L.A. from working in this little town? I said, you know what? I didn't even think about where I was going. I just jumped in the stream and let it take me where it was going. I didn't beat my head against the door. It didn't open. I just went around to another door, and I always just flowed with the stream. And we used to be like that as Native Americans and Aztecs and Incas. And all, when we were back in what would have been primitive times to us, we were more advanced than we are now. We used all these signs around us, and we walked through the forest looking at these things and knowing exactly what was going to happen. And as we became quote-unquote civilized, we shunned and threw away all these things. Yet there are more signs around us today than there ever were. There are literally printed signs on buses and boards and TVs, and they're all giving you a message. If you pay attention and you can read them, it will show you where you're supposed to be and what you're supposed to be doing that day. But some people are tuning back into that now in droves. I'm happy to say they're noticing the synchronicities in their life.
Yeah, that's really good. One more time. We're almost out of time. So one more time, Randy, can you give out your websites and the name of your book, please?
The name of the book is The Key of Life, and the website is thekeyoflife.net, or under my name, randolphrogers.com. You can get there or go on to Facebook under Randy Rogers. You can find me, or under The Key of Life. I have a fan page there. And also Amazon and Barnes & Noble on the web have it under The Key of Life.
Now, Randy, do you have any events coming up, for the rest of this month and in through, maybe the rest of the year?
Well, I am going to, and it'll be up on my website and on my Facebook page. But right now it's completely cleared because I'm in Pennsylvania. My mom had a heart attack and ended up in the hospital and actually in hospice now. So I've been here for 2 months dealing with her and the problems she's going through. She's getting ready to leave onto another journey, and she's really good about the whole thing. And so it's kind of an exciting time here with us. And I had to cancel anything. You were my last interview today, and I had my publicist hold off until I saw what was happening here, so then I could move forward. But when they come up, they'll be on my sites for you to see.
Okay, good. And when you're coming through here, really let me know.
I will. Okay. Send me an email, or I'll have Sarah send it to you, and I can get your phone number and that, and we'll connect up. Or I'll send you an email off your site. Yeah.
I'll call you back. How's that?
Okay. All right, great.
Okay. The other thing, one more thing before we go real quick.
Sure.
Do you have any other stories that are going to be coming out, any other books that you're working on?
Well, I'm working on another screenplay for a motion picture, and it's not a story of mine, but it's a story that took place back in the 1800s, and it's a true story about two girls and these metaphysical events that occurred to them back there, back in the 1870s, and I've been researching it, and again, it fell into me synchronistically as I was following the story that I'm on now, so that's what I'm kind of working on now on Hollywood.
Okay, great. Well, it has been very, very nice talking with you, Randy, and,
sure.
Your information is really quite good, and the book was very good, so I really do recommend it for people who are kind of in the search, because a lot of people are searching, and it's actually a pretty good book, so just, let people get that and get out there and do what they got to do. But, Randy, thank you very much for taking the time to be on the show, and hopefully your mom will do what she needs to do in a, short period of time.
No, she'll be just fine, and, well, thank you for having me, Nancy, and I'll be talking to you in a little while.
You're very welcome. You take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye now. I'd like to thank you, the listeners. May God bless all of you. Have a great week, and we'll talk again. Bye now.